Latter-day Saint Home Educators is pleased to bring you this audio presentation, recorded live during the May 2023 Youth Education Conference held in Salt Lake City, Utah.
All right, how's everybody doing today? Good. Who wants to be a farmer? There's a lot of hands, and then there's a lot of hands. So that's fun. All right, fantastic. So I am William DeMille, and we are going to be talking about what the future education needs to be for farmers so that we can grow lots of food for people. There are two great big challenges in the world right now about farming and challenges for farmers. One is to produce enough good food so everybody in the world can get food. There's actually plenty of food in the world, but not everybody can get the food who needs the food. And so that's pretty sad. And so that's not only a challenge for farmers, but it's a challenge for everybody in the food industry. The second big challenge that farmers face nowadays is nutritious food. So we can grow lots and lots of food, but a lot of the food that's grown doesn't have the nutrition in it that we should have. So those are the two big challenges. And today I'm going to tell you how to grow food in such a way that it has the most nutrition in it. Does that sound interesting? Do you want to know how to grow food with the best nutrition? Yeah. Okay, here we go. So do you guys have your little note thing? So yeah, I'll be going through that. If you miss one, you ask me and I'll tell you and you can get it filled in, okay? In order to make a profit today farming, you need a really deep and a wide education in four ecological processes. So a deep education is you learn a lot about one thing, and you learn more and more and more, and it gets deeper and deeper as you dig down into the information. A wide information means you learn more things about it. So you add another thing, and then another thing, and then you learn something else. So the more you learn, the more topics you learn, your education gets wide. And the more you learn about each one thing, the deeper it goes. So we don't just want a shallow education about lots of things, or we don't want a deep education about one thing, but we need a wide and a deep education about lots of stuff. But the four ecological processes, let's talk about the water cycle real quick. So that's the first one, and these are not in any particular order, so I'll just tell you in any order. So next time you hear me speak, they'll be in a different order. That's okay. So the water cycle is when water evaporates. Water evaporates from lakes and rivers and streams, and it evaporates out of plants, and it evaporates from the soil. The only place on our land, on our farms, that we want water to evaporate from is the plant, and we call that transevaporation. If it's evaporating directly out of the soil, then it didn't do us any good, and that's a bad thing. We want it to go through a plant first, so we want to grow lots and lots of plants. All right. The second ecological process is called ecological succession. Ecological succession. So think of Hawaii. Hawaii has a lot of volcanoes, so I'm going to go over here. It has lots of volcanoes on this side of the island, and brand new rock is being formed as the lava comes out, and it's spewing out, and it's rolling around, and it turns into rock. So that is the very first land that is made. And then if you walk over here on the island, the rock is getting covered with mosses and lichens, and all those plants are growing on there. But they're unorganized plants because they don't have roots and stems and leaves and flowers. They're just sticking to the rock, okay? And then if you go a little bit further on the island and you get over here, then you see a bunch of plants that are starting to grow, things like weeds that you'd find in your garden, thistles and stuff like that. And then if you go a little bit further on the island, you start seeing grasslands, and the grass is everywhere, and you can't see the soil anymore. And then on the very, very end of the island, way over here, what you have is a jungle, and you have lots of big trees. So ecological succession is this process of brand new land and how it evolves into soil. All right, and we see this in all the ecosystems of the Earth. Sometimes in places like the Sahara Desert or the Gobi Desert or the Arabian Desert, where there's lots and lots of rocks and sands, we don't find very many plants. But thousands of years ago, those places were covered with plants. So succession can go the other way, too. It could have trees way over here, and then the trees would die, and it would become a grassland. And if those died, you'd have all the weedy type of plants. And if all those die, you'd go back to mosses and lichens. And then when those die, you have nothing but bare rock and dirt. And sand, thank you. And so we would have all these different stages of succession. Some stages of succession are perfect for the plant we want. So somebody name a food you like to grow in a garden. Strawberries. Where do we find strawberries out in Mother Nature? In the mountains, under the trees, huh? And so they're a late succession plant. So they're going to be growing over here in the trees. So if we want to grow strawberries without fertilizer, without any plant food at all, without spraying for bugs, without spraying for weeds, then we would create the condition in the soil that we find in a forest. And then they thrive without having to put all the stuff on them. True story. Somebody name another plant you like. Tomatoes, they're late succession too, because they grow in the jungle, so they're growing over here. So it's the same thing. You'd have that same soil. So you can grow tomatoes and strawberries in the same type of soil. Somebody name one more plant that you love to eat. Yes, on the back. Cucumbers, they're kind of in mid-succession. They're over here. So they grow in kind of the middle area of the ecological succession. Does anybody eat broccoli? Anyone? Does anybody eat cabbage? What about kale? What about Brussels sprouts? What about collards? All of those ones, though, that's the brassica family, they are early succession. So they're going to grow way over here on this side. Okay? So they are growing in early succession. But where the plant grows does not tell you what the succession is. It's just an ecological indicator of what it might be. Okay? The thing that actually tells us which succession we're in is how much fungus compared to how much bacteria is in the soil. We call that the fungal to bacterial ratio. So if there's mostly fungus, you find that in the forests. If it's mostly bacteria, we find it in early succession. If they're equal, that's a mid-succession, like a grassland. Think of the Great Plains where there used to be millions of buffalo, and they would run around, and they would eat the grass, and the wolves would chase them around, and all that stuff. That is a mid-succession. And most food crops that we grow nowadays are a mid-succession plant. So your soil needs to be balanced with fungus and bacteria. Okay, so that's kind of what succession means. The next ecological, what did we call it? The cycle. The next one on there is the mineral cycle. And this is where the minerals are created to feed the plants. This one's exciting because this is where the microbes do all their work. The fungus and the bacteria, the protozoa, the nematodes, the microarthropods, the macroarthropods, the earthworms, all of those guys that are living in the soil, they will melt down the sands, silts, and clays into plant food so we don't have to buy any more fertilizer. And if you're not buying fertilizer because the soil is just functioning properly, then a farmer can make more money because you don't have to buy all that expensive stuff. So if you get your mineral cycle working, then it's working naturally in the soil, then you don't have to buy any of this stuff, and then you are more profitable as a farmer. The last one is the energy flow cycle. This is where the sun shines down on the ground, and if it hits bare earth, you're not capturing anything at all. It has to hit a plant leaf, and then the plant leaf will capture the sunlight, and it will make sugars and proteins, and it will put those into the ground. And we call those exudates. And the exudates go into the ground, and bacteria and fungus eat the exudates, and then that's one of their food sources, and then they will give the plant minerals in exchange for that. Okay? So there's your four ecological processes that you need to know and understand. And I know we only have a minute to explain them right here, but we could talk about them for hours to really understand them. So I don't expect you to understand them fully right now. But if you understand those four things, those four ecological processes, then when you make a management decision on your farm and you say, yes, it will enhance every one of those, then it's a good decision to do. If you make a management decision on your farm and it's going to help the water cycle, but it will throw your ecological succession to a place that you don't want, then don't make that decision. So if your decision hurts one of the processes, don't do it, because they all work together as a whole. Okay? Yes.
So can you review what the four are?
The four ecological processes are the energy cycle. So that's the sun, the water cycle, the mineral cycle, and ecological succession. So that's what they are, okay? Does anybody know what the biggest costs are right now in agriculture? There's four great big costs. Number one is fertilizer. Number two is fuel. Number three is, does anybody know? Labor. It takes a lot of money to pay all the farm workers. Number four is machines, because the machines are so expensive. And there's other costs, but those are the four biggest ones. A few years ago, fuel was number one, but in the last few years, fertilizer has got more expensive. I have a friend in the Dakotas. He spends $500,000 a year on fertilizer for his 40,000-acre farm. So that's way too much. But he started farming the way that I'm teaching you today, and after 5 years, he wasn't buying any fertilizer because he converted his farm from fertilizer to a soil that works the way God created it to work. And now that that soil is functioning properly, he doesn't have that bill anymore. And so now that's profit. And not only did that help his profitability in his farm business, it helped his finances. And when you fix your finances, it helps to fix relationship problems in your family. And it helps to do a lot of other wonderful things. So that's very important to get our farm expenses down. So there are five questions that you can ask yourself. And right before I ask them, you have a comment, please. The four ecological processes, thank you for asking, because they're the most important thing in the world. The mineral cycle, okay, energy flow from the sun, the water cycle, and ecological succession. And when those things are working, you won't have to buy anything from the garden center anymore to put on your garden. No fertilizers, no pesticides, no herbicides, nothing like that, because it will function and work really good. So how many of you want to be a farmer again? We already asked you that, but let's see it. Okay, how many of you want to make money farming? How many of you want to get rich farming? Fantastic. Okay, so this helps you to know how to do that, because we live in a world where people need food to eat, and they need a lot of food to eat, and there's a lot of hungry people who need us to come up with great ideas to get food to them. So we want to focus on your gifts. Your gifts. What is your gift? Do you have a gift? And what is a gift? A gift is something you are born with, and it's unique to you. I mean, maybe somebody else shares the same gift, but you have something very special. Have you ever heard of Mozart? He wrote all these symphonies, and he was a great musician. He was gifted at music. He was writing symphonies when he was a little tiny person. Right, so he was a gifted person. So what are our gifts? And we need to ask that question. The next thing is, what are our talents? So gifts and talents. So what is a talent? A talent is something that we work on, and sometimes we have to work really hard at it, but then we get good at it. So gifts and talents, and they're a little bit different. Okay? The third thing that we want to ask ourselves to see if we were born to be a farmer is, what are our interests? What are we interested in? And then we can write down a whole list of interests that we have, and this helps to guide our life to know what we should do. Number four is your passions. What is your passion? And let me define passion real quick. When you wake up in the morning, you're sitting there and you wake up and you're looking around and you're thinking, where am I? Oh yeah, I'm in my room. Huh, where's my room? You know how when you wake up, you're like, can be really groggy. And then all of a sudden you remember something really fun you were going to do. And suddenly, just like that, you're awake and you're like, oh man, and you jump up and all the tiredness is gone because you're so excited about the thing you're going to do. That means you're passionate about that thing. Okay, so when you feel that way about something, it's usually a good indicator that that is a passion of yours. The next thing is genius. That's the last one on this list is genius. So what is genius? Genius is a tricky one to figure out sometimes. I've worked with lots of young people, and they very seldom do they think they're a genius at anything. But the fact is, everybody's a genius. We all have genius within us. And sometimes it's easier to figure out what your genius is when you're talking to your friends, your family, and people you're helping and working with. Sometimes it's easier to figure out your own genius if one of those people helps you to identify it a lot of times. Okay, so that can help. Yeah. Yes, that is a different word. We're not talking about genus, but genius. Okay? Different subject. Good comment. Okay. Who was born to be a farmer? Who has just decided to be? Because we had a lot of hands earlier. So maybe you're not sure that you were born to be a farmer, right? And you don't have to be, because we can choose to do anything we want. But I think I was born to be a farmer, because it's all I ever liked. It's all I ever wanted. It's the thing that I was thrilled about doing. I loved being on a horse. I loved growing plants. I loved being outdoors. And so it just made sense to me to be involved in lots and lots of agriculture. And last winter, I stayed in the house all winter, and I finished writing this book right here. So this is my book, and it has all the exciting ideas that I've been sharing with you today in here, and it explains it. And so you can get this book and read it. How many of you have ever had problems with weeds growing where you don't want them? Okay, there's a lot of hands. So weeds are going to grow over here in early succession. So if you have lots of weeds growing, then you are creating early succession by your choices on your land. Okay? So how many of you have tomatoes that get that black spot on the bottom? We call that blossom end rot. And it's a red tomato. It looks like it's ready to pick. And you pick it, and there's this black, scabby, nasty-looking thing on the bottom of the tomato. Have you ever seen that? That's called blossom end rot. And that is calcium deficiency, and that's because we're growing the tomato not over here where it wants to be in late succession, but we're growing it way over here in early succession, so it's growing in the wrong kind of soil, and so it doesn't take up enough calcium to do what it's supposed to do, and so it doesn't form a strong, thick skin. So does anybody ever have any other problems? What about bugs? You ever had bugs eating your garden? Okay, we have some hands up. So if a plant is supposed to grow in this succession to be healthy, do you think that maybe if it's growing over here in this succession that it might be unhealthy even if it looks good? Yeah, it certainly could be. it doesn't have the nutrients in the soil that it's supposed to have. And if we don't give it fertilizer, it won't grow at all. So we give it lots of fertilizer, but nobody's giving plants fertilizer in Mother Nature, where plants grow great. And so the plant is actually struggling, and it's struggling so much that the pest comes flying along, comes zooming in, right? And it sees this plant, and if somehow, I don't know how, but somehow that bug knows, oh, that plant's unhealthy. Even though me and you are looking at our garden and we're thinking, yeah, they look pretty good. But the bug knows that it's unhealthy, so it'll land on it and it'll chomp it down and eat it. Because the ecological role of a pest is to start decomposing things that are not healthy. If it had been growing in this soil where it was supposed to grow, it would be so healthy, it would have such high proteins and such high levels of sugars that if the pest landed on it and started eating it, the plant is toxic to the pest and the pest dies. You ever read that in a gardening book? Absolutely. All plants. What do we do in the, what's the first thing you do in the springtime to get your garden ready? What do? Just start screaming answers. Plant broccoli. What do you do before you plant the broccoli? You weed. What do you do before you weed? Who said till? You're absolutely right. Almost everybody goes out there, they get the rotor tiller, they're tilling it up, or they get on a big tractor and the tiller's behind, and they're tilling it up. A farmer like me, I get on a 250 horsepower tractor with a 50-foot disc, and we're just charging through the field, and we're tilling it up. You know what happens when you till the soil? I'll tell you. How's that? We take a soil that is on this side of mid-succession, so we're right here, and on this side of mid-succession, we're growing all of the good fungus that feeds our plants, and we have lots of bacteria that feeds our plants, and lots of protozoa, and nematodes, and microarthropods, and earthworms, and the soil's working really good. And when we till it up, it starts over. Now, we've created a desert with no plants, and one tillage pass will kill 50% of your beneficial fungus. Okay, and a lot of us till the garden 5 or 6 times before we're ready to plant. And so we get tomatoes and strawberries and we put in our tilled soil. They grow in forests that never get tilled. They grow over there on that side where there's lots of fungus and not as much bacteria. And we just put them here where there's the most amount of bacteria. So now we get flies and bugs and mites and all kinds of weird things that are trying to decompose the plant, because that's what Mother Nature was designed to do, is to decompose plants that aren't healthy. And then we go to the store, where's all the spray so I can kill those miserable bugs? And then we spray it, and it might kill those bugs, but guess what it does to the microbes in the soil that were still alive? It kills them too. And so now we have this desert condition, and by killing more of the bugs in the soil, now it's even more desert. And we're all the way over here, and we're trying to garden on solid rock. Or we might as well be, because that's about how fertile it is once we do all that and get rid of all the microbes. Is this, who's depressed? Okay, this is supposed to be the opposite of depressed. This is exciting. Yes?
So,
if you tilled and planted broccoli, cabbage, collards, kale, Brussels sprouts, turnips, those are all early succession plants, so they'll actually grow pretty good in a tilled system. Okay, so how do you plant a garden if you don't till it up? Because we, mom and dad tilled, grandma and grandpa tilled, great grandma and grandpa's tilled. Everybody's been tilling for generations, for thousands of years of the agricultural revolution, right? Where did the agricultural revolution start? Nobody knows, but it was a long ways away, far away, and where it used to be grasslands, and now they're deserts. Because we killed off all everything, and for thousands of generations, we've killed off all the microbes. Nothing will grow, and now there's deserts. still sounds depressing, the rest of this talk is going to be really positive, okay? Who has a lawn? Who wants to turn a part of the lawn into a beautiful garden? You came to saw my greenhouse. Did it look like a jungle? She's going yes. Okay, so it looks like a jungle, and it's beautiful in there. And when you plant your garden, plant a jungle. Here's what that means. It's called diversity. Diversity means plant a whole bunch of plants together. If you have four plant families, okay, families, four plant families, not the genus, not the species, not the variety, you have to go further back to the plant family. So you have four plant families that are growing close enough together that the roots can touch. This will do a phenomenon in the soil, and it will grow a maximum number of beneficial microbes in the soil. And with a large number of microbes, they will do a thing that we call quorum sensing. You don't have to remember that, but that's what it's called in science. So when they do quorum sensing, the microbes will turn on genetics in the plant roots, and then the plants have pest resistance, disease resistance, the plants get bigger, they get really colorful, they get more beautiful, the flavors are better, and so everything about the plant gets better when that happens. But if you just have a garden and you have your tomatoes over there, you have your strawberries over there, you have your broccoli over here, and you have your carrots over there, and you have it all separated out, that will never happen. But if you mix everything up so it's just a big jungle, then you have all these plant families that are mixed up, then you will get bigger, healthier, happier vegetables and fruits. What do you think about that? You're learning stuff right now that's not even being taught in college, because a bunch of this stuff is brand new information that scientists are just barely figuring out, and it takes 15 to 20 years to get new information into colleges. So it's a good thing you came here today to learn this. Where did I learn it? Because I spend all winter long, every winter for about 4 months, on Zoom calls with the leading scientists around the world, because I'm a geek and I do that for fun. But it's pretty awesome. Okay? Questions? Any questions? I'll take a question here real quick. Yes?
So, since it doesn't use any pesticides or fertilizers, is it much better for the environment?
Yes, it's better for the entire environment, because we use less fertilizers and pesticides.
So like, what are the downsides and the wastes?
The downsides and the wastes. I can't find one. But there are some challenges. Let's say you want to feed a whole bunch of people. Let's just say wheat. You grow wheat to make corn. Or I mean bread, okay? So you're gonna bake bread. Does anybody eat bread? Anybody need some wheat to make a loaf of bread, okay? Oh, there you go. So, if we're going to have, say, a 1,000-acre field, it's a pretty big field, and we're going to plant it to wheat, how do we get four plant families growing together in a wheat field? Because when you go through and you harvest, you need only wheat there for the machine to collect the wheat. Otherwise, it's collecting all kinds of other things, and it's really hard to harvest. So that's a challenge. So what do we do? Well, I'll tell you what we're doing in cornfields. Instead of driving through the cornfield 8 to 12 times to get the soil prepared and grow the entire corn, because you'll drive through once to plow up the field, you'll drive through with another tillage pass, and then you'll go through and you'll spray for weeds, and then you'll go through with your planter, and after the corn comes up, you'll go through again and spray for weeds, and you might need to go through with a pesticide to kill bugs, but not always, and then you may go through another time before the corn's too tall to kill more weeds, and then you're going to go through somewhere before all that, you're going to go through with a fertilizer pest, put down fertilizer. And so you could get up to 12 times through the field. Every time you drive the tractor back and forth over 1,000 acres, does that burn a lot of fuel? Yeah. Does that get expensive? Yeah. Do you need 5 tractors to get it done before it rains? Yeah. So you have to have 5 tractor drivers? Yeah. Do you have to pay those people? Yeah. So these are all expenses. But here's what we do in corn nowadays. We have the combine harvester that goes through the cornfield at the end of the year. On the back of it, we attach a seed scattering machine. So we're combining the corn. Here goes the big old John Deere harvester. It's going through the field, okay? And it's getting all the corn. Out of the back of it is coming all the seed. So in the fall and early winter, the seeds start growing. And this is a multi-species cover crop with things like rye, oats, wheat, and hairy vetch, and turnips, and kale, and collards. And so just all kinds of weird things growing. You could even put sugar beets in there or whatever. You could have all kinds of things that are growing, and then they grow, and then a bunch of those are going to die when the dead of winter comes. But your rye and your hairy vetch are going to survive the winter. So in the springtime, they start growing really early. And by the end of May, when it's still corn planting time, those things will be 4 feet tall. And how many times have we driven through the field so far? Once to harvest the corn, okay? And now our cover crop is 4 feet high. And then we get a tractor, and we put a hitch on the front of it, a three-point hitch on the front, which is different because normally there's only one on the back, but now they're making tractors with a hitch on both sides. And then we have a machine on there called a roller crimper, and it goes in, so you're driving the tractor, and so this is our second pass through the field, and we put down that roller crimper, and it pushes all that down, and it kills the crop that's growing before the seeds are ready to sprout. So we're not planting any weeds, but we're putting down a living compost mulch on the top of the ground to feed the microbes in the ground. And behind the tractor, we're pulling our planter. And we're either going to be planting another crop of corn or soybeans or whatever cash crop we're growing. And so we're going to drive through the field the second time right now. So I'm in a roller crimp, and I'm going to plant my next crop. We're rolling it down. Wasn't that fun? I was a little boy once, and I never grew up. So we drove through twice. How many more times do we need to drive through the field? That was it until we harvest in the fall. So instead of 8 to 10 times driving through the field, we're driving through twice. And machines are really expensive. You know what the most expensive part? It's the really big tractor that has the lots of horsepower, like, you know, 175, 200 horsepower tractor. The only reason we need a horse or a tractor with that much horsepower is to do tillage. But we're not going to till anymore, so we can sell the expensive tractor and get a mid-sized tractor. A 90 horsepower tractor will do all this other stuff just fine, so our payment on the tractor is one-third the price. So we saved money. So now we're driving through the field at the end of that year with the combine, and we just repeat it. And what happened in the soil because we grew 20 different crops when our cash crop wasn't growing? It's doing quorum sensing. Genetics are being turned on in the crops. The microbiome, which means all the good bugs in the soil, are growing and thriving. We're building an agrotosphere and a porosphere down in the dirt, which means when it rains, the water from the rain goes into the ground, and it's held there just like a sponge. Instead of running off into the river and taking mud with it and causing fish to die and everything else that can you can pollute when you till up fields too much. See how beautiful this is? So who said, is it good for the environment? Yes, it is, and this is why. All right, you've had your hand up.
So why did people till in the first place?
People till in the first place because it was very hard to grow crops in the old days, and so now we still do it because we've been trained that that's how we need to do it. But with new machines, we don't have to till anymore. And there's one more thing, especially for LDS people. The scriptures talk about tilling. And so I had a problem with that when I learned what tillage does, because I thought, wait a minute, God said to till. Except I'm not sure he did, because if you look at the, because I did a lot of research. So when you look at the Bible, the word that they translated from into till, it was admah. A-D-A-M-A-H, that was the ancient word in another language, and they translated it into till. But other people who read that word, they see it differently, and they say, no, that's really not what it means. It means to nurture. It means to take care of. It means to worship. It means the same thing of what a mother does with a brand new baby. Admah. You take care of it. You nurture it. You give it everything that it needs and wants. That's what that word meant. And the people who translated the Bible said till. But so that's an interesting thing. And I'm not saying it's right or wrong or true or false or good or bad. I'm saying go do your own research and make your own decision. But that's very interesting to me. And when I saw that, I thought, well, I know as a soil scientist, I know what happens in the soil when we till, because it starts killing all the beneficial guys, and it makes the water, when it rains, not go into the soil because it starts running off. It causes the soil to compact, which is bad because the roots can't get through. It's killing our earthworms and all the other good creatures in the soil. And so maybe this makes sense. Maybe we don't completely understand everything yet. Maybe there's more we can learn. Because when there were lots of grass that was really tall and thick, if you would till that up, then you would just have soil that you could put your plants in. But nowadays, let's say you want to plant a garden on your lawn. Remember I said who has a lawn and maybe you want to put a garden on it? Go to the dumpster and get some cardboard. Does anybody ever get a box from Amazon and you have a cardboard box and then it's just trash and you throw it away? Don't throw it away because it's very good to feed the beneficial fungus. So get your cardboard box and just lay it out flat, take it apart, lay it out flat on the lawn, and then get some compost or some potting soil from a garden center and you put it on there about that thick, and then you can put your plants in it. And the grass won't come up through it. And you'll have this beautiful little garden right there on your lawn. You never had to till it. You never had to pick the weeds or anything. Halfway through the year, some of the weeds may start coming up. You will have some weeds to get, but it's so much easier than the old way of doing it. Okay? Yeah, that's a good way to build a garden, isn't it?
Yeah.
Fantastic. It's the same thing. So whether you're using a rotor tiller or a plow or a disc or a harrow, all of those things are the same. It's the same thing that I'm talking about today. Okay?
This is like efficient, like much better way of farming. How long is it going to take before it's implemented around the world?
Oh, we are at 38 million acres. The question was, how long does it take to implement this around the world? We're at 38 million acres right now of people doing this. Let me repeat that. 38 million acres is implemented around the world right now. 38 million is less than 3% of total farming. So if you have 3% of something, nobody's noticed yet. So we don't really see it. Most of this farmland that's been implemented is in the United States. Okay, there's some in Canada, some in Mexico, and some in Europe. Most of it is in the United States, in the wheat belt and the corn belt, which means the Midwestern United States, where there's the great big gigantic farms. Has anybody driven from here to New York? Most of the United States is this big flat farm. It's one big farm, right? With fences and barns and, okay? So that's where it's being implemented.
You also said earlier that it'll take about 20 years before it'll hit colleges because it's very new.
So yeah.
The next 20 years, when that does hit colleges, will it grow really fast?
I have no idea because I don't know what colleges are going to do with the information. Sometimes colleges don't do what we want. Okay. Yes.
When you're growing all the plants together so that they're like in this different family, and you want them to all be able to go in the same succession if you're going to grow them all together like that?
Yes. So you'd have your early succession over there, and you'd have your late succession over here. So you would kind of mix up your gardens a little bit. So that would be fantastic. Okay, that's the end of my presentation today. I'm super glad that you guys were here. And I know that we just barely showed you a teeny tiny bit of this. If you want to know more, my website is on the bottom of your page. My contact info is there. You can email me. You can text me. You can get on my Thursday night free class. That's a Zoom link. And so you can contact me for this information. You can come to my class. I have a class I teach for 4 months in the summer. Once you're an adult and your parents will let you leave home, you're welcome to come. Okay?
Latter-day Saint Home Educators is a nonprofit, all-volunteer organization dedicated to providing inspiration to homeschool families. We hope you enjoyed this record. If you are interested in listening to more recordings or would like to participate in a future conference, please visit our website at ldshe.org.